Hi, folks. My name is Dr. Amy Perlman. I'm a board-certified urologist with expertise in sexual health, hormonal health, and genitourinary health. And I'm at the AUA, the American Urological Association meeting in beautiful Las Vegas. And I have Dr. Andrew Sun here with me today.
Thanks,
Dr. Sun, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. My name is Andrew Sun. I'm a fellowship-trained urologist in male sexual health. I practice in Dallas-Fort Worth in a large urology group where I basically exclusively focus on men's health issues, low testosterone, Peyronie's disease, erectile dysfunction, and male infertility. So, yeah.
Now, we were kind of just chatting a little bit before this recording, and we're talking about kind of the theme of this discussion. And we kind of brainstormed, is it funky tea? Is it creativity? Because we're going to be talking about some of the art behind the management of testosterone deficiency in some different patient populations. And Dr. Sun is not presenting this work specifically at the AUA, but definitely keep an eye out because he's going to be submitting this work for some future conferences. Now, Dr. Sun and I, you and I originally met probably about maybe a year and a half ago. It was when I was looking into offering some of the innovative oral testosterone options. And I know in my prior practice at the University of Iowa, I didn't really know much about it. I wasn't sure how to get this medication to my patients. And so we spoke about it, like, how do I actually get this medication in the hands of my patients? And then we've worked a little bit together since then. So why don't we discuss, in your view, because you have a very busy men's health practice, what are the different testosterone formulations that you are typically prescribing for your patients these days?
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of different versions, and I would say that we pretty much concentrate on three things: pills, pokes, and pellets. Those are basically the three. So injections, pellet therapy, and oral testosterone. I don't do a lot of the topicals. I have a few patients that will do that, but I have just, you know, found that most patients don't like it or their levels don't get to where we want it to do. But some patients who want to do that will still do that. But in general, the mainstay is still injections. That's still certainly the most common type of testosterone prescribed around. But since oral testosterone has been on the market now for about 6 years, we've really kind of increased that share of the practice because for a lot of patients looking for an easy first line option for something by mouth, now we have it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting in the topical testosterone space because I really don't prescribe that much either.
Yeah.
However, a lot of the research trials are using topical testosterone.
Yes.
So it's nice to see at the AUA meeting, I just came from a poster session where there were several posters talking about different agents for oral testosterone. So that's been really fun to see. Okay, so you're using those three agents typically. What are some of the creative ways that you're using these medications?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, I think historically, we kind of generally thought of testosterone therapy in two major buckets. There's TRT, replacement therapy, which is all the conventional testosterone things. And then like off-label, but agents that were used to boost endogenous testosterone production, clomiphene, enclomiphene, HCG, things like that. And these were basically the two buckets. One was fertility-friendly, one was making your own testosterone, one was usually completely eliminating your endogenous production of testosterone and giving you exogenous testosterone. What I've been trying to find is there a way that we can blend aspects of these two and find something in the middle where you get the better symptomatic benefits of exogenous testosterone, but without some of the complete suppression and some of the side effects that you get from a conventional TRT therapy. And so in my journey to try and find a way to do that, I started using oral testosterone in a lot of interesting ways to try and blend the best of both worlds, I guess. And yeah, it's been really fascinating.
So maybe take us a little bit behind the scenes on why are the oral testosterone formulations less damaging for fertility in terms of the pharmacokinetics?
Yeah. You know, it actually is interesting. It started not with the oral testosterones, but with the nasal testosterone, right? When the first nasal testosterone gel came out, some of the data showed that essentially, seemingly, because it was such a short-acting molecule that was in and then out again, these patients preserved their FSH and LH levels, slightly suppressed, but they were still preserved, and it still preserves spermatogenesis as well.
And so, that was a big reason why people were interested in that medication.
Right. Unfortunately, it was three times a day, and you know, having tried it myself, it's not exactly very pleasant up your nose. So, don't use it that much. But the insight that maybe a shorter acting testosterone that didn't flood the system with exogenous testosterone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week continuously could preserve some degree of internal production. And so then if you look at all of the oral, there's three oral testosterone agents. They're all the same molecule, oral testosterone, undecanoate, probably the biggest innovation there is that instead of being like methyl testosterone, which was hepatically absorbed and caused liver toxicity, these are lymphatically absorbed and therefore liver safe. But they all have the same pharmacokinetics, which is they're given twice a day and they last for about 8 hours or so with a peak that occurs around 3 to 5 hours. And so similar to the nasal, it's somewhat shorter acting. And so because of that is why I started to think about this idea that maybe you could use these shorter acting testosterones in the oral form to not suppress the endogenous system completely as well.
And we see that in terms of the just the lab values, right? Because you're tracking LH, you're checking FSH. And we know that those values, they do go down with the oral testosterone formulations, but they don't go down to zero, which is what they do with some of the other longer acting formulations.
Right.
Okay, so guy comes in, he says, I'm not actively trying to conceive, but I don't know, like maybe in 5 years I might want to have a child.
Yeah.
And he has low testosterone. Let's say previously he was on, let's say, clomiphene and didn't feel better. And so he wants to be on testosterone. What are you going to do for that guy?
Yeah, you know, I think I still offer PIP men, especially the younger ones that are still potentially considering child rearing, clomiphene, like you said, this guy did. Now, of course, as we all know, maybe half the patients that take clomiphene, their numbers get better, but they don't feel much better. You can either give those guys straight up conventional TRT, and I might, in that case, offer that guy oral testosterone twice a day at the full regular dose. I like to stagger the doses such that the testosterone is supplemented in a fashion that most closely mimics a normal circadian rhythm, which is to say that you want your testosterone during the daytime, but you don't really need exogenous testosterone overnight. Overnight is when your body is normally trying to make its own testosterone. So if you can just give the testosterone during the day, but not at night, you may be able to give the pituitary and hypothalamus a little bit of a break and have it still generate its own kind of production. So that guy, I might give him one of two options. One is either just oral testosterone twice a day, say with breakfast and with lunch, and that guy will usually feel pretty good. And I actually have a fair number of patients now that are taking a combination of clomiphene or enclomiphene and oral testosterone once a day. And in this sense, they really preserve their FSH and LH levels, but they still get that boosted benefit of that exogenous testosterone. And that's been really cool because I can essentially seemingly use that oral testosterone to rescue the clomid non-responder guys.
Yeah. Now, we've spoken about this topic before, and you've spoken about how some of the clinics in the community are using, you know, testosterone injections plus clomiphene. And intuitively, we've spoken about this. It doesn't, like, really make sense in terms of what their goals are.
Right.
So how does clomiphene plus oral testosterone make more sense?
Yeah. So I think you know, we definitely see that, right? Testosterone injections plus clomiphene. But if clomiphene essentially, and this is perhaps a little, you know, dumbed down way of saying it, but if clomiphene essentially multiplies your FSH and LH by some value, if your FSH and LH are zero, then whatever you multiply that by is still zero. And so in a patient that is completely suppressed and has no signals whatsoever, I don't think that clomiphene necessarily does anything. But if you have some preservation, so for example, in the Kaisertrex clinical trial, which is one of the oral testosterone formulations, if you look at the data out to day 180, the FSH and LH compared to their baseline probably is about half or maybe 40% of what it started with, but not zero, like you were saying. So if it's not zero, then you can still, I think, multiply or boost it up. And so the clomiphene with the shorter acting testosterone, the oral testosterone, seems to still give that preservation. And that's why in a lot of times those guys, I give to them one dose a day of the oral testosterone to them, trying to limit that secondary exposure. And if they have a time to choose to do it, I tell them to take it at lunchtime, because the clomiphene and their natural circadian rhythm is already going to give them their high morning testosterone level. What the patient comes in with is a report of fatigue in the afternoon. And so then if you want that testosterone to be higher in the afternoon, you give them a lunchtime dose. It lasts about 8 hours. Then when it's time for bed, the exogenous T is gone. So they still have their endogenous signal and they get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I love that. Now, recently we were discussing this whole term of bioidentical testosterone therapy. And it's always an interesting conversation. Because the patients come in and they say, Doc, I want the good stuff. And they don't realize that all the testosterone formulations we use are bioidentical. What is your take on how the oral testosterone formulations might most closely mimic what maybe we actually would consider to be bioidentical?
Yeah, definitely a great point. You know, I've heard that term for many years, never fully understood what people meant by it. Did they mean what? Is it, you know, synthesized? Is it from soybeans? Is it from animal products? I'm not sure. I tell the patients, look, ultimately, the molecule, when it hits a receptor, is the same no matter what form you take it in. But if you take a, you know, biologically, chemically identical hormone, but administer it in such a way that completely does not correlate with normal human physiology, it's hard to call that bioidentical. So for me, bioidentical essentially means repleting or replacing testosterone or augmenting testosterone in a way that most closely mimics your normal circadian rhythm. And I think that if you understand the pharmacokinetics of shorter acting testosterone, like oral testosterone, you can basically time those doses such that you give that normal circadian rhythm. And a lot of my patients, this is anecdotal, you know, they report better sleep. I have some patients that are like pilots that fly a lot, and they actually help the use the timing of their oral testosterone dose to help regulate their jet lag. And it's just really interesting how you can do that.
Gosh, it's like the new coffee.
Yeah. Little coffee, a little oil testosterone, there you go, right?
I love it. Okay, so we just spoke a little bit about combination therapy with something like clomiphene and oral testosterone, but you're also doing some other combination therapy, right? I don't know that I've ever seen, admittedly, I haven't looked on PubMed for this, but I haven't seen this at any of the meetings, combining different testosterone formulations together.
Yes.
So what, and I have one patient that does it and he's freaking crushing it.
Yeah.
So what are you doing in terms of combining TRT?
Yeah. You know, one of the other interesting things that came out of the oral T trials is that it appears to be the only form of testosterone replacement that actually exerts a suppressive effect on SHBG production. And so regardless of what else you're taking, as long as you're taking the oral testosterone, you seem to suppress SHBG levels. Well, certainly there are some men, right? They come in, their total T may not be that low, or maybe it's okay, but they have really high SHBG, or they have such high naturally produced SHBG that you have to give them such a whomping dose of injection to get their total T up high enough, to get their free T good enough, that they start to get all the side effects, polycythemia and hair loss and acne. And so sometimes I'll basically add oral testosterone to, say, an injection regimen in an effort to lower the SHBG such that I can therefore lower their amount of total injectable testosterone taken, which means they don't reach the same peak total T level, which seems to mitigate some of the side effects, right? So you're using the aspects of one. And, you know, in these cases, I use a smaller dose of oral testosterone because I don't need to use the oral T as the TRT aids it. I'm using it as an SHBG suppressive aid, yeah. Right? And then you see
so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So
like with those things, yeah. You know, these are things that sometimes the patients actually have taught me. Right?
Yeah.
Like they'll just come in and they'll be like, hey, I'm doing this. And I'm like,
my patient asked, and I combined it, and I was like, I mean, I don't see why not.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so like what dose of, let's say, Kysotrex would you put someone on if they're going to combine it with injectable TRT?
So I usually, for those guys, I use what is the official starting dose, which is 200 milligram, either BID. Sometimes guys have made forget to take the second one, and that's okay. One of the benefits here is because you're not completely crushing your endogenous production, even if you forget a dose, you still maintain some reasonable level of testosterone. Unlike an injectable patient who is on injections for 6 months and then forgets a dose, you know, he feels pretty bad because his key is close to zero. So I usually use a lower dose when I'm augmenting with something else like clomiphene or testosterone injections. And if it's just oral T alone, then I'll usually shoot for the highest dose right off the bat, which for Kysotrex is 400 BID and for Jitenzo is 396 BID. I think those are probably the most effective doses for the most of the guys that are just taking it at TRT.
Yeah, well, that's so fascinating. Well, I am going to keep my eyes out. They're going to be open wide for your research, right? But I think in the meantime, you know, until you publish that, you're probably one of the most experienced people in oral testosterone. So what is your message to people watching who maybe haven't had any experience with a oral T therapy set?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this is still relatively new and still there's a lot of, I guess, to use the catchphrase, like misinformation about it, because I would say 50% of the time when I mention oral testosterone, the first response is, I thought that was really bad for your liver, right? And they're thinking of what we all learned in medical school, which is methyl testosterone from 1935. The modern oral testosterone undecanoate formulations are completely different. They have no liver uptake, so they have no liver toxicity. And I think it's definitely worthwhile to look into, also especially for your first-line therapy guys. You know, I think as a testosterone field as a whole has been unique because it's such a common problem, but we haven't had a pill for it. And most people think the first-line option for any problems would be a pill, but we're using gels and we're using injections and we're doing this stuff. Now we have a pill. And I think when patients know about that, when providers know about that, as a first-line option, it becomes, oh, yeah, of course, let's try the pills first. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think that's an amazing message. So, Dr. Sun, thank you so much for chatting with me today, and stay tuned for the next episode.